Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. Good to see you all. Thanks for joining me on this wonderful cold evening here in California. If you guys are out there, I hope you guys are staying warm. If you guys are out there investigating, make sure you bring some blankets, dress warm, you know, of course, and always be safe. So thank you guys for joining me. You guys are hearing the audio on Live Paranormal, of course, and then you guys are following the show here. And you guys can catch the replays on Paraflix. And, of course, the YouTube channel. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button. Get those alerts. You know, see what's going on. If you guys have any interest in what we are doing and what we are talking about, please feel free to put it in the comments. Let us know what you want to see. We've been doing that for a while now. It's working out great. So glad to hear some of the feedback that you guys have been sending. And it's been really great, positive things. So we do appreciate it. You know, let us know if you want to see us do the investigation stuff out there for the Paraflix show as well. You guys email us and let us know, and we'll be glad to check out some of those locations for you and bring you the background on a lot of those places and the cases that we do. Moving on, I want to bring on a special guest this week, a longtime friend of the show, Mr. Wayne Poe. You guys remember we talked about him when he was doing some films, but he was doing a DVD called Hotel California, but it was actually Hotel Camarillo. We were talking about the DVD that he did, which is based on one of our favorite asylums at the time, Camarillo State Hospital, which they've converted into Channel Islands University. Make it a little more difficult for those of us who really love that place to investigate to do so. But thankfully, Mr. Poe was able to do the documentary and bring some of those stories to you regarding that place that, unfortunately, we do not get to cover. So let's go ahead and bring Mr. Poe on the show. Look, I just busted a rhyme, everybody. So here we go. Hey, Wayne, how Hello. Are you? How you doing?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Stefan? All right.
Keeping busy, trying to stay warm. It's cold out there.
Yep.
Well, awesome. So I was just telling the people that are tuning in and watching the show, reminding them about, you know, your DVD work, which has always been incredible. You're a great documenteur, and especially with Hotel Camarillo, which was amazing, and then the one previous to that was Night Stalkers for Paranormal Investigators, which was huge. And let's talk a little bit about that. Let's go back to the beginning of how you started getting into the paranormal.
Well, I've always had an interest growing up, but not a serious one. And eventually I just kind of grew out of it and became more of a skeptic. Didn't believe in ghosts and things like that. And in about 2009, 2010, I wanted to film something, and a friend of mine suggested a documentary. So the ghost shows just barely started coming on. I think Ghost Adventures was on, and Ghost Hunters. And I decided to do a documentary on people that hunt ghosts to see what it was like. I didn't have any belief in ghosts at that point. I thought it would be a kind of a fun thing to focus on the people that do it instead of the evidence, because I didn't think I'd get any evidence anyway. That's pretty much how I started. I made a bunch of phone calls to all the local paranormal investigators around Southern California. I got a very few hits, but the ones I did have, one of the groups that answered me, I was out a week later, I was out on an investigation with them.
Cool. And this is one of the teams that was featured in the documentary?
It was in Night Stalkers. Yeah, that was Psy Paranormal. And they broke up even before the documentary was over, before I finished it. So a lot of groups came up and broke up in a 2 or 3 year period. You know, so there was a lot of changeover.
You know, it's compared to the entertainment industry. You know, it's like bands. You get these bands that are coming out, and they're coming out blazing guns, and all of a sudden they just burn out real quick. You know, and they all join different groups and subgroups.
Yeah.
And stay with it. Some don't. I mean, you just kind of move on and continue with the field, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of sad to see some of the breakups of the groups, because some of them I didn't know that well. Some of them I really respected, and even the bigger groups were breaking up too. So by 2013, a lot of the big groups were already gone. You know, there's some still out there, but they don't seem to investigate or put their investigations online anymore.
It's good to see that some are still around, though. I mean, it's like paranormal people. You get these people that kind of stay true to their investigative work. They came from some of these groups. And I've noticed that over the years. You know, I see these groups come and go, and they're always lumping together. But there's always these key members that kind of keep the torch going.
Right.
Well, excellent. So tell us about... with Night Stalkers, you're doing stuff for Linda Vista Hospital, which is what's always an amazing place. Tell us about the production for that when you were putting that piece together.
The production for Night Stalkers or one of the segments like Linda Vista?
Just the whole concept. You decided you're going to do this documentary.
Oh.
You contacted teams. How did you kind of group everything together and start focusing on the documentary itself?
Well, I just waited for, I contacted a lot of groups that I got to know later, didn't answer me the first time. Like, for instance, 3 a.m. Paranormal, I didn't get a return contact. HAPS, what was that? Harbor Area Paranormal, NOPS, didn't call, you know, didn't write me back. But I got to know these groups later on, you know. So when I started, Psy Paranormal was the first group to contact me, and I just started going on these trips with these groups, like a reporter going in and behind the scenes with like the troops, you know what I mean? I didn't want to put myself into the documentary. I wanted to just, you know, document what they were doing, you know. That was my main focus, is document what the people are doing and why they're doing it and how they're doing it, how they set up. And as I got more and more into, finally a couple more people would email me. So I'd go on their investigations. And then one of the big things that happened was Queen Con at the Queen Mary. And I was able to meet a bunch of paranormal investigators all at one time. And just, I was just there like going, wow, you know, everybody's here. So I'm listening. I interviewed the Booth brothers, a few other people, Mark and Debbie Constantino were there. I didn't interview them, but I recorded what they were saying. They had a small, presentation, and I was there for the 2 days that, I don't know if it was any longer, but I was there for 2 days for Queen Con, and people got to see me and know what I was doing. They saw my cheap little video camera that I had. I wasn't a huge production. I was just this one guy with a small cam, you know, consumer camcorder that ran on a tape, at the digital tape. That's how I had this big brick camera. That's what I recorded my first documentary on. And it was kind of underwhelming, I guess, for some people, but other people kind of eased into me more, that I'm not this huge corporation doing a documentary.
I know some people are like that, but nowadays people are just doing it on their phones and stuff and making these big productions. So it's like how the times have changed, you know, from big equipment down.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah. Towards the end of Night Stalkers, I had to retire my camera because I couldn't find digital tape anymore. But, you know, the digital, the tapes go into them. They stopped selling them at Best Buy and stuff like that. So I had to upgrade as you go with the time. Now I could just do an investigation on my phone, I guess. But I like to get a few better shots. I have a camera that is much better than the one I used to have. And you know, if and when I do a third documentary, if I could get one started again, I'll have all this extra equipment I could only dream about my first documentary.
Nice. It's always good to have that stuff in case you ever really need to use it for different things. I mean, now you got all the equipment, now you can just go on and continue doing more and more stuff. So awesome. Hey, tell us about when you're making that, the locations that you were at, like what are the key points of some of the places you went to?
The first few locations were residentials. And I don't know, I was kind of nervous to go to people's houses and because some of the claims by the investigators that I was with were a little wild, that you have a demon in your house or this person was killed in your closet.
Yeah, it always starts off with a demon, right?
Towering in the corner back there. Yeah. And I'm going, wow, you're really telling this person they have a demon in their closet, and then we're gonna bye, see you later, with your demon still in your closet, you know? So it was kind of weird like that. I was glad when we got to location. So the next group after that group I went with was RIP Paranormal, and they investigated Suicide Bridge, and then it went on to the Anaheim White House with CPPI. And then after Queen Con, I got to know 3 a.m. Paranormal more. And I was able to document the very first one to document the beginning of the Paranormal Housewives. And they were at Linda Vista Hospital. So they were filming something for the very first time. And I got to document that. That was pretty cool. Yeah, and then after that, Rebecca from 3 a.m. Paranormal said, if you think Linda Vista is the main scary place, wait till I take you to this other place we go to. And that turned out to be Camarillo State Mental Hospital.
That's awesome. And what a great place that was. So much history. I mean, just the history alone is good. And then you get the hauntings and the weird things that are happening there. It's just such a great place. I wish we had, they didn't tear some of those buildings down, because some of those buildings were so great. And the research being done there was so good. And it's sad that they had to redo a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, I have so much for, well, my second documentary is Hotel Camarillo, about Camarillo State Mental Hospital, because everybody from Night Stalkers were telling me, oh, you got to go to Camarillo. You wait until you get to Camarillo, Camarillo this, Camarillo that, Camarillo this. And everybody was going all the time. So I decided my second documentary was going to be about Camarillo State Mental Hospital, because I knew at least one investigator who'd been going there for over 10 years, and he had 10 years worth of footage from Camarillo. And right now I've got sitting on my hard drives for the past almost 10 years now. I could do five or six Hotel Camarillos. That's how much video footage and investigations. And I got all kinds of stuff on Camarillo. I only made Camarillo, Hotel Camarillo 1 hour, because I didn't want people just to be falling off their chairs bored, you know, but
yeah,
I mean, I got a ton of stuff. I just wanted to put the very best I can get in there, you know. And I tried to do it the quote unquote right way, you know. And I contacted Cal State Channel Islands, and I wanted to know if I can film there. And they said, we want absolutely nothing to do with the paranormal. We're not interested. We don't care what's on YouTube. We don't want nothing to do with the paranormal. And I said, okay. And then that kind of gave me like a little loophole, because everything that's been recorded over the past 10 years has already been on YouTube, at least in pieces, you know? But I said, well, if they don't care about what's on YouTube, I can throw it in the documentary. They're not going to have a problem with it, right? So
I kind of got
away with that.
Yeah, as long as they're not officially saying something's haunted or whatever because of the school. They're good. They don't care what everybody else has done or what they've you know, filmed and put out there.
Right.
They have something to deal with them themselves. So,
So I got really lucky on that. I don't know if you wanted to squeeze in you wanted to merge into Hotel Camarillo now, but we can still talk about Night Stalkers if you want.
Well, I know Night Stalkers has some great places, and you're talking about some of the teams you worked with, and it's funny. We're talking at the beginning of the show. We're talking about paranormal groups and certain people in these groups and they come and go. And you mentioned like three or four groups that I really enjoyed working with, you know, in the past, back in those days. And it just seems sad. Where are those groups now? I mean, they kind of moved on. But like I said, each one of those groups had like these key investigators, which were amazing. You know, 3 a.m. paranormal. I mean, I learned some good stuff from spending time with those guys. So I wish that some of those teams were still around.
Yeah, me too. I practically, I don't say I lived at their place, but I was there a lot. And I learned a lot of, I asked Joe Mendoza tons of questions because him and Rebecca, I could see they were more serious than the earlier people that I was following, the Psy Paranormal and Demon, yeah. You know. But the later groups, like I said, CPPI and 3 a.m., they took it more seriously. And I was able to ask questions and, you know, just because I didn't know any answers. And why, I have friends I asked, why do you investigate at night? And then a lot of the stuff happens during the day. And they said, well, we'll investigate during the day if that's when the activity is. But a lot of times the activity at night when things are quiet and you can hear things going on. During the day, there's so much going on by the outside world, you're not going to be able to hear an EVP or a quiet whisper or anything like that, you know. Or if people get hit or knocked over or something, if that happens during the day, they'll go during the day. I said, okay, that sounds interesting, you know. And they'd give me their different theories about what they think is happening. And not everything was a ghost. Not everything was paranormal. You know, of course, you're in places that have been abandoned for a while. You know, buildings are going to settle. Things are going to crack and stuff. And I'm glad I wasn't with people that go, oh, my God, and ran out of there. You know, they was, oh, that's we hear that all the time. That's nothing. You know, this and that. Let's move on. So it was really cool to be with those groups and able to ask them intelligent questions, and they're not giving me answers that are tinfoil hat answers. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Crazy conspiracy stuff, or like, you know, once again, like you're talking about the teams that go in there and right off the top, they're a demon. If someone got scratched, it must be a demon. Everybody leave. Like, really? No. Come on. Let's rethink this. What if it's just a regular spirit who thinks you're a dick? And wants to make you think it's a demon, you know? And that happens all the time. So come on, guys. The chances of it being a demon.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, the more serious groups taught me is if you're a jerk in real life, you'll probably be a jerk when you're dead. So it's not a demon, it's just an a-hole. That's a ghost or a spirit, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not a demon.
I can't say that I wouldn't be one of those guys. You know, if I'm just kicking back all of a sudden here comes the jackass, tell me your name. Who are you? It's like, oh, this crap again? No, I'm a demon. Here, look, I'm gonna move a cup.
I'm Abraham Lincoln.
Run away. You know, it's like, no, dude.
Right. Unfortunately, now.
Go ahead.
Unfortunately, now what I see on TikTok and YouTube is especially at Camarillo, I've seen, you know, we found a demon, or they're running for their lives, and they're bent over, you know, going, oh my God, you know. I'm like, give me a break. I spent so many hours and a couple of years in Camarillo. There's nothing, at least at that time. I mean, I haven't been there in a few years. There's nothing demonic about Camarillo as far as I saw.
I totally agree. I've been there many, many years, and it's always been pretty good. And I've had good experiences there. I had a spirit come up to us in the middle of one of the hallways, and it was like four of us there. And it just casually, you hear a man's voice say, hello. It's like, he wasn't trying to scare us. He was trying to figure out what we're doing and trying to get our attention. Like, hey, what are you guys doing? That kind of stuff. It wasn't like, oh my God. it's trying to get me. It's going to eat my soul or anything. But I know these people who film these shows, they're just trying to get a reaction so they can get ratings. And it's always that way. Oh, my God, run. It's coming after right. us. Run. It's like, dude, really? Come on.
Yeah, it's kind of sad to see. I mean, like I said, I've seen a lot of stuff lately on YouTube and TikTok, and it doesn't seem like people are investigating seriously anymore. There's no serious investigations going on, or at least not that many. They're more like you said, sensationalism, and you know, oh my God, there's something coming at me. And you turn the camera on. There's nothing there. It was right there before you turned the camera. You know, and yeah. You know, it's just. It doesn't look like anybody's debunking anything. I mean, I've seen some things lately in some of the paranormal groups, and they saw a child hunched over in the hallway crying because they're in Camarillo. And it looks to me like it's a smudge on the window you're looking through. Yeah. You didn't even bother to debunk that, you know?
Yeah. Clean the glass, then so, try to see if you can get an image. I mean, yeah, that's what it is.
Right, all these exactly.
People out there just TikToking, doing their quick, you know, 30-second videos on YouTube, and I get it. People like things that are scary, but to a true paranormal investigator, we're not in this looking for something scary. We just want to know what's happening, what the difference is in these hauntings.
Like, right.
How come this one does this? How come that one does that one? I'm okay with watching documentaries where it's not quick camera images or, oh my God, it was right there. I just saw the corner of my eyes. What was that? Do you hear that? You know, I don't need all that stuff. I love watching documentaries about the history of a place, who the people were, what place is now, you know, maybe the stories of those people might be haunting there. It's like, great. You know, but I don't need all the jump scares and all that crap, because I'm not looking right. for that. Maybe I'm just mature now, and I don't need those little things, but I want something quality where I'm watching, go, oh, that's interesting. Oh, that's cool. You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, my documentaries, you can find them on Amazon Prime right now. And some of the comments were like, where's the ghost? I didn't see anything. And I didn't see no ghosts. This is how you call this a ghost documentary? That's not what it was about. You know, I've been doing this since 2010. I've never captured a full body apparition on video, and hours and hours and hours of filming. At least for me, they're not that prevalent where they're going to come up and, hey, I'm here. I am, you know, you're not going to capture all yeah. kinds of things like that. EVPs and something door slamming. That's different, but you're not going to see a ghost every 5 minutes.
Yeah. They don't work on command. All right. Bring in the ghost. All right. On yeah, three,
and one thing,
walk in the room.
Right. the one good thing about Hotel Camarillo, one of the main investigators, Frank Brekos, he had 10 years worth of videotapes of going to Camarillo in the same places, the same buildings, and things like that, that we could go 10 years later, still the same. Most of the same places were still up. So, okay, this is 10 years ago. This is what you captured there. Well, let's ask the same questions to see what happens. And so we had all of this knowledge and this, you know, what this building what has happened here before. And, you know, so if we're there maybe an hour, we're working on information that's been collected for 10 years. So we're adding to that information. We're not just going into a place the first time and, oh, we're here for 5 minutes. I don't see a ghost. Let's go. You know, and we're trying to keep building on the history of what we have so far. And one of the cool thing is you can actually see how Camarillo changed over 10 years. Like there was Unit 44. That was one of the most scariest places on campus, I was told, you know. And it's no longer there. I mean, the building is, the shell of the building still there, but it's now it's brand new classrooms and stuff in there. So it's not really there anymore. But there, we have footage from when it was abandoned and empty, and we built on that. That's what most of the documentary is returning, And this is what happened then. We're going to see what happens now and see what activity comes up.
Yeah, exactly that, you know. And it's sad. It is a different room there. It looks all redone and stuff. That's where the black bathroom, I believe, was, which everyone got a lot of activity in. Everyone talked about. And that's all gone. So it's really sad.
Yeah, I love the black. When we first found it. Yeah, when I first saw it for myself, this is crazy. It's all black and everything, you know. And just the way the tub was in the middle, and there's two observation mirrors on each side. You know, it just looked like something out of a horror movie. I did do some research. I did as much research as I possibly could. And I found out, I believe it was painted by university students that did some kind of a small film in there. It was never black when it was Camarillo State Mental Hospital.
Yeah.
So I think some film. Yeah. It might have been a short film, or it might have been film from one of the university students that painted it all black, but it seemed to add to the activity. There's a lot of EVPs that could be found there.
Like ghosts going, why is it black now? Who the hell did this to my bathroom?
Right.
Damn kid.
So it wasn't scary enough. Thanks for making it black too.
Yeah. Yeah. But the fact that it was in that building that was known as the psycho area, where they would do the psycho analysis and stuff like that, just add to the whole creepiness of it. Like, oh my God, they must have been torturing people in here. It's like, no, this was done for a video shoot. I mean, come on. That happened.
Well, people were tortured at Camarillo. That's all the research that I've done. You can find it in the LA Times articles. We even interviewed a former patient from Camarillo for Hotel Camarillo, and he told us some wild stories about the orderlies putting fire hoses on people and then getting their skin blown off and stuff like that, and all the, you know, just
yeah, when they were trying to
some horror stories he was talking about.
Things, they would turn the hoses on them, of course, and that's always a torture from those days,
right?
Yeah.
Sad. He told us about what's known as the Thorazine shuffle, where you're given some kind of a cocktail of two different drugs, and you're just walking around like in a daze. You don't know where you are, and that's what they did to most of the patients, so they can control them, or maybe not have to even deal with them, you know.
Yeah, here, I'm gonna take this stuff and go sit in that chair, and they just like zone out, looking at the TV and stuff, drooling on themselves. It's like, wow, I'm turning them into a zombie.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah.
So with Hotel Camarillo, tell us about, like, when you're doing the research, some of the stories that you heard were pretty horrific. Like, what's one of the most horrific stories that you were told when doing the documentary?
Well, the things that I found when researching, like people would commit suicide there. One patient hung themselves in a closet with handkerchiefs. According to, there's a book called The Keeper of the Keys. And it's allegedly from a nurse that worked at Camarillo. And she wrote it more like almost like a diary. And she was talking about doctors impregnating patients, and some of the patients that got pregnant, possibly the bodies were buried on the campus, you know, with unmarked graves, the babies, you know, drug sales there, torture just for the fun of it. One person she told about, and this has happened in Ward 44, the person locked himself in their room and set their mattress on fire and died in flames. And she has a whole passage about that from Unit 44. So there was some really, there was some really wild, you know, lots of people. There was, like, for instance, 1976, there were 75 deaths that didn't get investigated. And then suddenly everybody started investigating Camarillo State Hospital, and a lot of the mental hospitals started having investigations about why these people are treated like that. Why are there so many deaths going on in this place where they're supposed to be there to be treated for mental illness and later on drug rehab and stuff like that.
It's strange because places like that, state hospitals, which were supposed to take care of people, rehabilitate people, you know, psychoanalyze them, do the best they can with them, supposed to be giving them a program of hope. How many times do we hear about those places that just have exactly that? They drug them up, they leave them in a room, they're malnourished, they're not taken care of, beaten, tortured, experimented on, women raped and stuff. It's like almost all the ones that we hear from those days are just have the same horrifying stories, and it's very sad.
Right, and another passage in Keeper of the Keys is they heard the governor of California was going to visit. So they cleaned up one ward, cleaned the feces and their urine off the floor. They made it all beautiful, and they walked him down that unit that was cleaned up. And I found a correlating real-life paper clipping of Ronald Reagan as the governor of that time in 1967. He went there to tour Camarillo because there was other reports of misconduct there. So he went to take a look, and of course they showed him down the sparkling brand new cleaned up corridors and stuff, and people had new clothes on and stuff like that, and you know, everybody's happy and waving to the governor. So you know, and meanwhile the other parts of the hospital they didn't show him were a mess, you know.
Yeah, like when they're doing lobotomies on people and experiments like that, you know. Stay away from that side. Let's send them over here to the happy spot where the garden's at.
Right.
And everyone's dressed nice, you know, waving their California flag, you know. It's like, come on. And it just took time.
No, sir, stay away from that shock treatment machine.
Yeah, don't go in there. Nothing to see over here, you guys. Yeah, very, very sad. And the Keeper of the Keys book, I remember that.
Yeah.
I think Sid and Mary Holt. Mary Holt was telling me about all that stuff during those times too, because she did a lot of spending a lot of time at Camarillo as well. But interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I'm glad you're.
They were also in the documentary, and they lent me some. One of them was really interesting. I believe it was Mary. She was taking a medication for something. And God, I can't remember. It's actually been a while since I've watched Hotel Camarillo. But one of the EVPs she caught was talking about, like, take them all. Yeah, take them all when she was taking her pills. Like, take them all, you know. And it's kind of weird when you get EVPs that comment on the action you're doing then, not just help me or this and that. They're commenting on a specific action you're doing. Those are the greatest EVPs to capture.
Yeah, and was it a patient saying that, or maybe was a power order saying, hey, yeah, take all these pills, take them all right now, you know, who knows?
Right.
Yeah, that's crazy stuff. So when you were doing Hotel Camarillo, did you feel anything yourself when you were there doing the filming, or what was your experience personally for being there?
Well, I hardly ever feel anything whether I'm on an investigation or not. Every once in a great while, I'll feel a tingling, you know, in the back of my head. Very rarely, it only lasts for a second. While everybody's jumping, there's people I respect too. They're jumping around saying, oh my God, this is something around us, this and that. I don't feel anything, unfortunately. I mean, there was one point where they were seeing shadow people running up and down the hall on one side. I went down there not to be a dick, but I wanted to feel something. So I, please go ahead and touch me if you're here.
Yeah.
And I walked straight down the hallway waiting to be touched, you know. I really wanted to experience that, you know, even though I'm a open-minded skeptic and I,
yeah,
you know, all that, I still, if it's there, I want to feel it, you know. unfortunately, nothing like that happened. Right. The weirdest thing is, you know, when I'm not on an investigation, that's when I see weird stuff. When I'm in an active investigation, when I'm at Camarillo, I don't see anything. You know, the only thing I saw was when early on, when I went with 3 a.m., I saw what looked like little, if you've seen fireflies before, right?
Absolutely.
They move kind of slow. They fade in and they fade out and they fade in. These are going really fast like that. And I saw that down the hallway and they were white and they're right in the middle of the hallway. And the first thing I thought of was, I thought someone was messing with us with a laser pointer, but I'd never seen a white laser pointer before, you know? And so I mentioned it to the group. I mentioned Rebecca because she saw, I saw something. I said, what are you seeing? And I told her what I was seeing. It was just, it's down the hallway right there. I was like, oh, we see that all the time. That's like when something's trying to manifest itself. And it was so commonplace to them, they didn't care. You know, I was looking at it, what the hell is that? You know, I couldn't capture it on my camera, but I could see it, you know? And that's the kind of thing that was commonplace to most of the investigators. They've all seen what I just started seeing. So unfortunately, I didn't get really, well, maybe luckily I didn't get scratched or pushed. And I had a friend of mine that was with me that was pushed when she was walking down the stairs. And she felt that, and nothing's ever interacted with me like that at Camarillo or really anywhere. I mean, like I said, the only time things happen to me when I'm not on an investigation. For instance, I was out with a friend of mine at a bar, and I saw something walking by. It was like a grayish mass. I saw it walking by. I don't drink, by the way, so it wasn't from beer. I saw it walking by, and I saw it, and I turned my friend. I said, did you see that? But she was already looking. I said, you saw it too, didn't you? And she said, yeah. I said, that is so awesome. You saw what I saw, you know. Cool. I wish I had those kind of experience. Yeah. I wish I had that kind of a interaction at Camarillo, but unfortunately, as much as I got so many hours of film, you know, like I said, I could make 5 more documentaries. But I didn't capture anything like that, unfortunately. Just EVPs and door slams, and that's about it.
Wow.
But still, and I was looking too, man. I say,
yeah. It's funny. You're opening yourself up to them saying, hey, I'm coming down this hallway. Everyone said they saw you. Just touch me. Come do something for me. And then like the spirit's like looking at you and like, well, wait a minute, this guy wants us to touch him. Like, let's hold off, guys. You know,
it's like, why? That guy must be crazy. Stay away from that dude.
Maybe it's one of those things. They're used to the other investigators who are doing things for the other investigators, and you're kind of a new person. Like, well, let's see what this guy's all about. What's he gonna do?
You know, something I noticed that too, because when we regularly went to Camarillo, we'd get like good 10 EVPs, no problem. When we bring a couple new people, it's like it was completely dead. Like there's nothing happening that entire day. We were there for a couple of hours and we didn't hear nothing. You know, it's like they have to, it's almost like what the energy has to know you there before it'll start feel like they can interact with you. It's kind of, I don't know how to explain it, but it seems like that when a core group goes there, we get it's normal activity. When we bring some new people in, it's quiet.
That is something I've noticed over the years. And I say that to a lot of people, you know, go in there. If you're there for the first time, let them know about yourself. Let them know who you are. Don't be the stale old investigators that everybody watches on TV, and all these TV shows are such bad examples of investigative work because they're trying to make these little quick episodes of all this crap. And like, I get it. It's just like trying to streamline production videos just so they can make money and whatever. But if you're going into there, a new place, go in there with respect and just think about what if you were them, you know? Go in there, introduce yourself to them. You're a new person. Try to have fun with the spirits. I do this whole music party thing where I go in there and I find out about what they're all that era was about. And I have a night where I just play music for them and I put my meters out. I'm like, let's have fun, you guys. And then after a while, they're like, oh, that was that guy. He's back again. Cool. Let's hang out with him. And I've gone to so many places so many times that have like brothels and all these things. And I've always tried to be friendly with all the spirits. I'll go there with certain psychics and they'll be like, oh my God. I'm like, what do you mean? What's happening? Like, they're up there shouting your name, saying, hurry up, come on in, hurry up, come up, you know, because they remember me from having a good time.
Oh, that's cool.
And I want to have good times with the spirits. They deserve to have a good time. And I get such great evidence when I'm having fun with them. You know, I'm not even asking the family questions. When did you die? Are you a demon? Are, you know, that kind of crap. It's like, no. What was your favorite kind of ice cream? You remember ice cream? You know, that kind of stuff. What kind of music did you like? You know, do you like it outside? What's your favorite flower? Something totally different, because they'll be like, oh, no one's ever asked me that. Well, my favorite flower is the dragon leaf and blah, blah, blah. You know, maybe you'll get something different. Make it fun.
Yeah. Like I said, again, this is around 2011 or so, or 2012, when I went with 3 a.m. Paranormal. Rebecca would bring M&Ms. And so we brought some candy. And some M&Ms, she put them on the floor, you know, just to see if there's any reaction. Sometimes we might get an EVP, sometimes not, but it was good to try new things like that, you know, to see what kind of, I bring, for instance, I got some cigarettes that I bring every once in a great while. I don't smoke, but I'll bring them because that's one of the main things in life. People are into football and smoking and stuff like that. And see if that would bring a response.
Absolutely. I've been on an investigation where we had a little cooler of beers and we're just like, hey, you guys, you know, blah, blah. We did that at Linda Vista Hospital. We're filming there. Just put them up and just try to have fun, little offerings. And I think it makes a big difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's
awesome. I've done to start things out, I've done, you know, my name is this and this is the year 2023. And then I'll just get into other like laid back questions, you know, just to see what could happen.
Yeah. And that's what it's about. This is, hey, I'm here for my first time. You know, I want to interact with you. And if possible, my name is Stefan. You know, I'm into music. I'm a musician and I do this stuff. And I just want to, you know, you're introducing yourself to you. So after the second time you come back, you're no longer a stranger. They have an idea who you are. And then when they get a feel about the way you do things or your personality, and these spirits are energy, so they're connecting with you. You know, you can try to pretend like you're somebody else, but they're getting in your mind. They know what's up. And they know if you're a cool person to hang out with, or if you're just there because you're trying to exploit them or whatever. You know, and I've said that at the McKay Mansion in Virginia City. They always talk about this one spirit. He's really tall and he's really mean to people. He's almost like a monster and hangs out in the garden. And I'm all thinking about it. I'm like, well, if I was the caretaker of this place and I had a bunch of jackasses coming in and asking me the same crap every day or every 3 hours, you know, when they're having these events, I'm just going to get grumpy and I'm going to go hang out in the garden until you guys leave because it's boring and you guys
suck.
What's in it for me? But every time I've gone there, I've had such great experiences because I'm doing the, hey, I'm here and it's all about you. What do you guys want to do? I have this little meter, a periscope, and it's got a 360 and it points in different directions. I used to say, hey, take me somewhere cool. What do you want to show me? Take me. And all of a sudden, it'll point in one direction. I'll just follow it like a guide. And I've done that there. And I've never come across anything negative. Everyone's like, oh, it's going to scratch you or punch you or bite you and blah, blah. It's like, that hasn't happened to me there at all. I think it's just the way people go in there trying to investigate, especially those stupid TV shows where people are like,
oh, yeah, I've heard a lot of that. There's, yeah, I've heard of places like Rolling Hills Asylum and Waverly and stuff that this ghost is here. This ghost is here. This one's over here. This is who you're going to interact with. No other ghosts. Then this guy has this personality. This guy has that personality. If you're getting anything else, you did it wrong. The best thing about Camarillo is there's no docents there to tell you, this is what you're going to experience right here. you know, you investigate for yourself and you find out for yourself what's there or what's not there. That's the best thing about places that aren't heavily monitored, let's say.
Yeah, because I mean, how can they tell you that? Well, this ghost hangs out right here only. He doesn't really leave this area. So how do you know? What if he's got to go to the ghost bathroom over
Yeah,
there?
Exactly.
He wants to go visit his other ghost friends on the other floor. They're not trapped.
Right.
They're not chained down like zoo animals or something. They're spirit. They're human spirits, right. And they act as like people. They're going to hang out and visit who they want to do.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I think especially at
That's why sometimes I... Oh, yeah. There are some places I go to, I don't do a whole lot of investigation that has to do with paranormal. I'll investigate the place, the history of it, but I'll wait till I get home to read the paranormal stuff about it. You know, when I get there, I'll just want to see what I can capture. Oh, this is cool. It said Michael. Wonder why it said Michael. And then I'll read about the paranormal stuff, and maybe a couple other people captured Michael, you know. So that's a good way to correlate your work.
Yeah, maybe right. It was someone who worked there, or a doctor, or maybe a well-known patient, or whatever, you know. You find out the history of it after the fact. You're like, oh, that's interesting. That was that person.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool to find. It's like a detective story, and you find out that stuff and put all the pieces together, you know.
Yeah, and that's what I love about that kind of stuff. That's why I like the documentary stuff. And with my Parafix show, I started doing it that way. I didn't want to do the same stuff that everyone else is doing, you know, the creepy intros and like, oh my god, we heard about this here, right here on the stairs, blah blah blah, and they do the jump scare stuff and oh my god, run, you know. That doesn't do it for me. I want to know why that building's there, who put it there, who the people who worked there, what happened there, and what, you know, I want to know the history. I want to know the place. It's not just about a bunch of jump scares at some place that's an urban legend. I just want to know about the people, places, and things there, you know? That makes it better for me.
I just talked about this a week or so ago on another program. But I've met a lot of people that used to work at Camarillo, and there's two different types of factions, it seems. There's one faction that said, oh, I worked there at graveyard shift. I worked there for 25 years. There's no such things as ghosts there. There was no torture there. There's no maltreatment there. Everybody was treated with kindness and respect and get out of here with your ghost stories, you know? And then there's other people that I meet. So I do some of these horror conventions where I was selling DVDs, and people come up to my table and go, I used to work here. And they're looking at the documentary like they're seeing a ghost, you know? They're picking up the DVD. I said, did you see any paranormal stuff? And they turn me and go, like that. They don't even want to say it, you know? And I said, what did you see? I don't want to talk about it, you know? But yeah, I saw a bunch of stuff there. And I asked the questions, go, yeah, that happened. Yeah, that happened. And then they'd buy the documentary, but they wouldn't talk to me though. They wouldn't tell me any new stories. They were just
their own personal
scared, spooked, you know?
So, they don't want to relive it.
They didn't want to. It seemed like they didn't even want to talk about it because it might stir something up and follow them home or something. But they did take the DVD home though.
Yeah, exactly that. They don't want to relive those moments or talk about it because the demon from the hospital might follow them home or do something to them, you know?
Right.
I do believe. What was that?
Sorry.
I believe.
I've talked to some people that were in the documentary, and they've had things follow them home before. But it's not. I mean, there wasn't plates being thrown against the wall and stuff like that. They just noticed a couple of things, maybe moved or talked to them at night or something like that. And it only happened. Only lasts for like a day or two. It's not that a ghost moved in and now they're there like an extra like an extra roommate or something like that, you know, that's going to throw stuff every other day.
Well, one of my theories on that is the spirit, you know, when you're opening yourself up and you're having a good time with the spirit might like you. And they might go home with you just to check out your place and see what you're all about. But it doesn't, it's not permanent. It's like there for a day or so, and then it kind of just moves back on to where it was going before, you know?
Yeah, I remember one of the psychics that we were with kind of explained it's like they're on like a rubber band. They'll follow you home, but they can only stay for a little while, and then the rubber band brings them back to their point of origin or something.
Yeah, absolutely. That
way I mean, it sounds interesting. Yeah.
Sure, why not? It makes sense. You know, I've done that with investigations. I've brought things home before. One time we brought home a spirit of a cat, and I saw the cat, and I thought that was interesting, and I didn't say anything to my roommate. And then my roommate mentioned it to me. He's all, "Did you see the black cat?" I'm like, "What? What are you talking about?" And he's like, "Yeah, black cat." And I saw the corner of my eye, and it was this big old fluffy cat, kind of black and gray, and it was heading over towards me, right? And then what I caught my eye is, you know, when cats get close to you and they get to you, they do that big stretch and they bend their back out right before they get to you. It did that. And I'm like, "Oh, that's interesting." And I really saw the black cat. I'm like, "Oh, dude, really?" And then we heard someone like digging through the trash in the kitchen, and we had like cans on the counter, and you hear like hitting tap, like a cat was messing with it. I'm like, "Really?" And then I happened to mention it at a barbecue. The was there. And she was like, "What are you talking about?" I'm like, "Oh, nothing. We had this weird experience where we saw a cat that came home with us, and we're describing the cat, and she looks at me and goes, "That's Fluffy." I'm all, "What?" She's all, "Yeah, that's our cat Fluffy. She disappeared like 3 years ago." I'm all, "Well, Fluffy's kicking back at my house right now, knocking cans off the counter, so she's doing just fine." But it was like a day and a half of that. I was like, "Really? What's going on here?" It was really strange, but pretty cool at the same time. And why not?
That's pretty awesome.
So that opened up some eyes for me when I was thinking about it. So it made a lot of sense. I know you've been to Linda Vista. That's kind of in your area. What about experiences there? I had the first time I saw a shadow person was in Linda Vista, and that kind of threw me for a loop because we're coming down this long hallway. It was me and Tara Mead, and we're just talking, and we're getting towards the end of the hallway, and all of a sudden, this like out of the corner, this like shadow gets up and starts moving, and I'm like just talking to her, and I'm looking, and I'm like, "Oh, where's this guy going? Like, what's going on?" And I look to see if there's somebody behind us with a flashlight, and there's not. There's just this really tall shadow thing just getting up and just kind of slowly moving out of our way and going into this other room. I'm like, "What the hell?" And then you look in the other room, and it was just a bunch of hospital beds. So it kind of threw me for a loop, and I had to, my brain had to like process it for a minute because I wasn't sure what was happening. I'm like, "What? What the hell?" But any experiences like that for you at Linda Vista?
I was at Linda Vista a lot. I mean, hours and hours there. And nothing, I didn't get anything. I didn't even get EVPs there. But I loved being there. I loved filming. I filmed a bunch of stuff there, you know. And sometimes the caretaker would tell us, you know, he's going to go home for the night. You stay as long as you want. I don't care what you film. I said, "Oh, this is cool. Okay, so we film stuff." And nothing really happened to me there. I went to a lot of events there. And people are telling me their stories about all the, like I said, the shadow, like you said, the shadow people happening. And for instance, 3 a.m. was telling me they saw this shadow thing appear on a wall next to them. And they said they were so freaked out, they didn't even move their camera. They just saw it and they're just frozen, you know. I don't know if it's Rebecca or Joe, said they were there when 3 a.m., with Ghost Adventures, and while they were filming, they saw something run down the hallway, and they all of them, the Ghost Adventures and 3 a.m. ran down the hallway to see if they could see it, and they said it was so cool to be there with Ghost Adventures running down a hall chasing a shadow person, you know. And I said, too bad they don't put out like an extended version of that episode they did to see if
Yeah,
to
the
see if
behind
that
the scenes.
happened.
That would be amazing.
Right. Now, the funny thing is, like I said, I didn't get any evidence there, but that's the first place that I heard a disembodied voice. It was the very first place I heard a disembodied voice. They had a movie night there. I think the movie is called The Orphanage. They showed that in one
Oh,
of the big
yeah.
rooms.
Yeah.
And at the end, everybody was filing out. There was maybe one or two or three people in the room. And right behind my head, like right here, I heard someone say, Wayne, like that. And I thought it was just a regular person, right? It was a female voice. I turn around and there's nobody there. And I'm looking around. I'm looking over here and over here. And I said, where'd that person go? You know? And there's a couple people in front of me. And so I went up to them. One of them I knew, his name was Lewis. I knew, and I didn't know talking to a female. And I said, did one of you guys say my name? And they said, no. And then the woman said, I don't even know your name. You know? So
oh, wow.
I didn't tell anybody because, you know, I'm a skeptic, of course. So I didn't tell anybody for like 3 days. I was trying to figure it out. How could this have happened? Could someone be calling me from outside and it bounced off the wall and I thought I heard it behind me? But after a while, that's what skeptics do. They overanalyze stuff. That's what we do. And then you get so far as it becomes ridiculous. Well, maybe it bounced off the wall and it was here down the hallway and it came through a heat pipe and that's what you heard.
Yeah.
You know, after a while, you just say, you know what? That's silly. So you heard someone call your name that's sitting right behind your ear. I don't know what it was. If you don't want to call it a ghost, don't call it a ghost. But it was something there and you heard it, like as if someone's right behind you. And you can't dismiss that because you're a skeptic. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, especially in a place like that. I was with Lewis downstairs in a certain area, and it was by the emergency rooms, and we're doing some EVP work, right? And he's like trying to give an example to two people that are standing there, and he's like, all right, let's try this. Spirit, if you're here, can you say something for us? And waited a couple of seconds and then played it back. And there was a woman's voice. And she said, move out of the way. And we're just like, what does she mean? Move out of the way. What? And then we realized we are standing exactly in front of the emergency room, the doors. The doors that you push open and go to the operating areas. So what? Maybe there was some kind of residual thing happening. They're still doing their job and working on people. But we were obviously in the way. So we're like, that makes an intelligent EVP because we're standing right here in the middle of the way because we're a bunch of jackasses not thinking about it. And she's telling us to get out of the way. So it was awesome to hear that and to experience something like that.
I noticed more from the first documentary, Night Stalkers, that I was introduced to ITC, Instrumental Transcommunication. And that's what people call spirit box now. And, you know, when I first heard about it, I was like, you got to be kidding me. Of course you're going to hear voices on the radio. This is stupid. But the more I experienced it, the more I saw it, this is impossible that it's not something, you know, because it would say, you know, what is this person's name? And it says the person's name right away.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, how would that happen? Plus, when it was explained to me, signals only on each station like a quarter of a second, and if you get a full sentence in the same one voice saying something, that's almost impossible, you know, that's just to be a radio voice, you know.
Yeah.
And from Linda Vista, what I understood, Sarah that was there, she said, you've been here so much that I hear your name on ITC all the time. I hear Poe, Wayne Poe, 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 like that. And even 3 a.m. was telling me about that. Even when I'm not with them, my name would come up. This is all during the production of Night Stalkers. We even went to the Barn Theater in Porterville, and it did it there too. It said my name over and over again.
That's awesome.
So at first I was trying to see if they're really messing with me, you know, why are they telling me this? But then I was there and I saw it. No one's No one's got a secret, like a prank video, prank radio with my name in it. You know, it'd be stupid to think that, you know. But it happened a lot. It still happens to this day. My name will come up, you know. Wow. And it's a funny thing. When I go to other skeptics, I'm considered not exactly a skeptic anymore, I guess. When I show them this information, I said, there's something, I know you don't want to, I know there's a lot not to believe, but there's something going on. And I show them the evidence where it's saying my name. I said, well, your name is simple. If your name was Abramowitz, then I would believe it more. But your name is Poe. It could be Joe, Poe, Hole, whatever. You know, so they didn't really want to believe, you know. Like I said, skeptics don't want the wool pulled over their eyes. That's the one thing they worry about the most. They don't want to be fooled. So they'll explain everything away. You know, that's just how we, for maybe formerly me, are. But, you know, I don't dismiss anything out of hand anymore like I used to.
It's funny you say that, because when I started learning about ITC, you know, obviously the Frank's box and all that early stuff came out, and the Shack hack, and I was doing the Grand Warner theater one night, and was like, oh, let's break out the Shack hack, and, you know, we'll talk to the spirits, we'll hear them talk to us. And they turned it on, and all I'm hearing is radio commercials and radio, and they're doing a audio matrixing, and they're like, oh my God, you hear it? It totally said, you know, it welcomed us and blah, blah, blah. And I'm not hearing that. I'm just like, what's going on? This is just garbage.
Right.
I never really took it serious. And then I met up with Joe, and Joe was showing me some other stuff that he was using and how he was doing it. And I really got into ITC because of Joe Mendoza, kind of brought me to that. And he's like, yeah, let's do this and have some fun. And so we started doing that, and it was a little bit better. I'm like, okay, this is getting closer, but I'm still kind of on the fence. And then it was Schultz goes, well, here's an SB7. Take it home and play with it, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, all right, we'll see. And I took it to a well-known haunted location, a house that I knew that was pretty intense. Well, I'll let you turn on and see what it does, whatever, you know. And we turned that thing on, and there was this voice. And it wasn't even scanning. This thing was just like, this guy was pissed. He told us that we're a bunch of jerks, and he was calling us names, like totally cursing. And it was like overwhelming, and you could just feel the energy rising in the room. I'm like, the hair on my arm's standing up, and I was like, hold on, dude. Hold on, man. We just want to ask some questions. And my tech guy was there, and he was getting all confused. He's like, well, what are we doing? And then the voice goes, looking for ghosts. And he started calling us assholes, and all of a sudden he said, it's going to kick me in a place where I don't want to be kicked. And I was like, oh, hold on. I'm trying to make peace with this guy right away to start over. But it was just like so legit. I was like, what the hell? But it changed everything for me. I mean, I think Tara was there with, like, trying to take a picture, and she just like freaked out, and she goes, I got to get something in the house. So she's in the room. Asshole. I mean, it was just amazing. It was a crazy experience. But now that kind of launched me in the right direction for ITC experiments. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I had long talks with Joe about ITC and how the different theories are, and how maybe the ghosts are using the static to try to make sounds, make sentences and things like that. And actually, it was Lewis who showed me another thing. It's almost like natural ITC, because there's a couple places in Camarillo where you'd hear the heat pipes banging, you know, bang, 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 yeah, like that, you know, making all kinds of noise. And some of them would bang down the hallway, and you could hear the echo going down the hallway, you know. And he captured voices off of that sound. He'd capture EVPs that were used. It's like it looked like it was using the sounds to help make a voice to be heard, you know. Like he played a recording for me. This is early on in Night Stalkers, and he heard the bangs, and then you hear a voice following the echo, like, what do you want, like that, you know. I said, that is freaky, man.
Yeah, that's how it's done. You got to create a sound wave of some type for them to manipulate it so they can get that vocal structure over it. That's awesome. Excellent. Well, Wayne, we've only got a few minutes left. For those who want to find out more about you and the stuff that you've done, how would they be able to either get a hold of you or do some research on you?
I have an Instagram, Mr. Poe's Morgue, which has a link tree to everything I've got. I do have a website, MrPoe'sMorgue.com. It hasn't been updated in a couple of years. There's probably nothing there. I don't even know what's there right now. If you go to my Instagram, if you find me on Instagram, Mr. Poe's Morgue, I have a link tree in my bio. It's got links to everything. My YouTube channels, my Facebook, all that stuff is TikTok. It's all there in the link tree right there. You can find that there. And also Night Stalkers and Hotel Camarillo is available on Amazon Prime right now.
That's right. For those of you who want to find out a little bit more about Wayne, do exactly that. Look him up on Instagram. You can go to Amazon and find the documentaries. Order them. They're fantastic. I hope you're going to be doing more of them because it would be great to see more of your view of the paranormal and what you're seeing and experiencing as well. So, Wayne, thank you so much for joining us. I truly appreciate it. It's good to have you back on the show. It's been a few years, so I'm glad we had a chance to catch up.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. And we will be talking soon.
Thanks for having me on, man.
All right, Wayne. You have a good night.
Thank you. See you soon.
All right, everybody. That is Wayne Poe, highly recommended documentary on the paranormal. And like you said, he's not just trying to find people running around with their quick scare stuff like we see on YouTube. And that's all great, I guess, you know, if you're into that stuff. But people like me really want to know about the location. Even if it's a house, someone's doing a haunted house, you know, we always try to do some groundwork. Was what if something was on these places before? What's the history of this location? You know, everything that has a haunting has some type of story behind it, why it's haunted, how it became haunted. And I want to know more about those kind of places, you know. We hear stories about places like Griffith Park, which is so massive. But there's so many key elements of the curse of Griffith Park, which it's just a great story, you know. And I think it'd be awesome if someone did a documentary on that. Who knows? I'm doing a lot of work over there and doing some studies on that place as well. Maybe I can contribute this to whoever might be doing a film on it. That'd be great. But I want to see more research and stuff like that. You know, I'm looking for the real stuff, the stuff that's going to make me understand why this place is there, who those people were, the things they had to go through. You know, if they're still haunting it, tell me why they're still haunting it. You know, maybe I can go there and visit them and get their story myself, because that's what investigative and research is really all about, learning about stuff, not just doing the weekend warrior thing with your camera and your flashlight running around a graveyard. That's all great too, you know, but it's really the moment where you decide what kind of investigator you want to be, and learning about the history of locations and the hauntings of histories. Really, really does it for me, because that's what the stuff that I'm looking for. So if you guys have any questions, and if you guys want to reach out to Wayne through the YouTube channel or whatever, put some comments in there. Go ahead and make sure you subscribe, like the video. If you want to ask him questions through the YouTube channel, we will make sure to send those and forward those to him so he can get back to you. So with that being said, that's going to be it for this episode of My Darkest Hour. Hope you guys had a good time, and we will see you next time right here on My Darkest Hour.